This episode is a poolside chat with Tom Justice and Bob Burkhead. Bob is a longtime NAFA member and expert in air filtration testing. This session was recorded at the NAFA Technical Seminar in Louisville, Kentucky, in April 2022. Enjoy this one.
You're listening to the Talking Air Filtration Podcast, where you get to know the people that make air filtration possible and help us all breathe easier, because clean air matters.
We'll get insights from air filtration professionals and learn how they became successful in their careers. Along the way, we will discuss best practices, guidelines, trends, and challenges in air filtration in a variety of applications. We hope HVAC, air filtration, and indoor air quality pros, including business development, engineering, building owners, and facilities management, will enjoy the insights our guests will bring to this podcast.
Welcome back, everyone. Looking forward to our next discussion for our poolside chat, because it actually should probably be a little warmer here right now. We had hoped it would be, with Bob Burkhead of Blue Heaven Technologies. Please welcome past, present, and Distinguished Service Award winner, Tom Justice, along with owner of Blue Heaven Technologies, Blue Heaven, who will be discussing lessons learned from testing, developing, and using air filters.
Thank you. And we're pleased to have Bob come in and speak with us today. We'll see where this conversation takes us. Started out as a fireside chat. Bob said, no, poolside chat. He was in Florida at the time. So I'm going to give an introduction to Bob. Everybody's going to say, well, you don't need to introduce Bob Burkhead. We all know him. But there's a lot of new faces here within NAFA, so let me give the routine spiel here, Bob, if you'll bear with me. So Bob Burkhead has been president of Blue Heaven Technologies since its founding in July of 2004. He has 35 years of experience in air filtration product development and production activities, including 25 years spent with two major air filtration manufacturing firms, which were, I call them the dark years. He was my competitor then. And then these last years have been spent as founder and president of Blue Heaven Technologies. He's also heavily involved in the Boy Scouts, is an avid U of L fan, and is a closet environmentalist. So let me ask you, how was the tour of Blue Heaven this morning? You may know all everything. So I give the pat introduction, but that doesn't tell us a whole lot about Bob. It leaves so much out. Well, knowing Bob for almost all the time he's been in the industry, I can fill in a lot of those blanks for you. I'm going to do so very quickly. But Bob basically started in 2004, didn't just start to be. He started from ground zero. So this was a business startup. And then over the next 19 years, he grew the business into where it is today, a very prominent, well-known filter test lab. Basically from nothing to the largest HVAC filter test lab in North America. But he's expanded from there. He's gone into cabin air filter testing, chamber testing, dust collector testing, and more recently he has become certified in ISO 17025. Is that correct?
It is, yep.
And he's also received one, he'll talk about this later, become certified in CARB. But the big thing about this is there's an underlying theme here. Is the success of this business has been the fact that he has built the brand of Blue Heaven. We could go back and come up with a number of reasons why, but I think a lot of the reasons probably been he's built a great staff. All of us here have help wanted signs. We can't fill existing positions. We can't fill new positions when we want to expand, but I keep seeing the same faces over the years up there at Blue Heaven. It's a great staff. So my first question, Bob, is, how do you manage this?
My first question is, did you not get the memo that you're supposed to?
It's under here. I forgot to take my
And you're supposed to wear pants, Tom.
I had my swimsuit on, but it was chilly.
The question is, how do we build such a staff that we could keep them this long? Well, you know, just like anything else, if you have a good time, you keep doing it. We assembled a team. I'd like to use the example of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan wasn't the brightest guy in the world. But he assembled a team around him that was stellar. And so he's going to look like one of the greatest presidents of all time. And he wasn't so bright. Well, that's me. You know, I've got a team that's just hard to describe. They seem to love what they do. We don't have rigid rules that are, you know, corporate staff kinds of things. We use the putting green every afternoon. We shoot basketball. We shoot guns out behind the building. You know, we just have a good time. But we also are focused on giving you the product you need. And that's been the secret all along.
We've got a few questions here, Bob. I sent out an email because I realized some of the questions could get a bit detailed concerning testing standards, what direction we're going. But I'm going to get my question in first because I realize that every day you're testing products from some company that represent their product development function. These are products, medias, finished filters that they're looking to commercialize a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years or so on. So you've got a very unique perspective of the overall industry. So are there any trends that you see coming or changes that you can share with us?
Yeah, I've got three of them on the presentation we'll get to. But for the most part, you all are focused on indoor air quality. You know, you're only filter geeks, as I call it, but there's a lot more to it. You all know that. So that's what's been happening. Recirculation testing, Dr. Miller mentioned several things about ionizing, other technologies that work or may not work. And that's the future. That's the testing that we've been doing. And I'm going to show you some examples here in a minute.
You've got it. If you want to share the slides now, it'll be a good time.
Some of you may or may not know, I have a granddaughter that's undergoing surgery right now for brain cancer. And it's a big deal for our family, and it's been a tough time. But I've been reading a lot about brain cancer. The doctor that wrote the book that I've been reading lately had this to say about PowerPoint, and I thought it was fantastic. He said, PowerPoint presentations, the ultimate compensation for a weak premotor cortex, and that's absolutely true. But I got to get the point across with something. So we're going to use PowerPoint and talk a little bit about it, but I'd much prefer to have conversational interaction. So let me shoot through this, and I want you to hammer me with questions. I told most of you during the tour this morning, that's what I appreciate. Tom mentioned this, and I'm just going to shoot these up real quickly. We're in a unique position at Blue Heaven in that we get to see all these technologies before they hit the street. I've often made the comment, if you really want to know what's going on in this industry, you can get a lawn chair and sit beside our dumpster for a couple weeks. You will see everything that's going to happen in the next few years. And it is true. So from our perspective, that's important. You can see the capabilities that are happening, the effort that's being put in resources and time, the corporate cultures that are impacting things going on, and how these applications actually work out to clean the air. It's been a fun time. Tom mentioned it. As we progress and do more and more, we get to see all this, and it's vitally part of our psyche. You know, now we've become, we're not accustomed to not knowing what's going on. It's kind of an interesting thing. I know that most of you make a living selling air filters, but I had my former boss, Mr. Chuck Rose, tell me this one time, indoor air quality, it ain't just the filters, my friend. And he's right. It is certainly an important part. But Dr. Miller talked about it earlier. It's only one part, and we got to act that way. I'm going to hit three major things here, and it's just to throw out and get you fired up because some of it's kind of controversial. Okay, the first one is going to be the efficiency degradation, and that's what I call charged media, filters that can go down in efficiency as they get dirty. Doesn't happen in mechanical filters, but it does happen in heavily charged medias, and it can impact things in a pretty dramatic way. Then we'll talk about chamber testing, which is room air cleaner testing, recirculating testing, multi-pass testing on filters that not the way we've been taught to see performance in filters. Single pass testing has been the thing for many decades, and it has to change. And I'll show you why. And then there's a lab certification that's been a part of our Blue Heaven effort over the last 3 years You may or may not appreciate what it takes to do ISO certification, and I really want to hear what most of you have to think about. Was ISO certification worth doing? You know, when we spend money on something, you know who pays for that. You do. You know what? We either raise our prices or have, you know, price increases that have to deal with the issue that we've got to cover more costs. So is it worth it? I want to hear what you have to say in a minute here. So the first one, efficiency degradation. I want you to think about something. You're accustomed to seeing these graphs with efficiency on the y-axis and particle size on the x-axis, right? By particle size and how well it performs. Well, this graph is not that. It's certainly efficiency on the upscale on the y, but time in the x scale. So I want to show you something here. This is a typical mechanical efficiency performance. I think most of you will agree. The mechanical filter gets installed, its initial efficiency is low. It gets better as it loads. And that's just the way things are. But a charged fiber filter, the efficiency curve can look like this over a long period of time. It starts high, drops low, and then can recover. And it's what I call process charged fiber. There are techniques to make fibers that require the high voltage electrical difference to even create the fiber. I'm not going to name company names, but you certainly will know who I'm talking about if you look at the patents. And then there's another kind of charged fiber that drops like a rock also, but it never recovers or very slightly recovers. And that's just typical. It happens. The famous throwaway filters that are at Lowe's and Home Depot, many of them perform this way. They go down and they don't come back. MERV number's fine, but MERV test only takes a few hours. This is a few weeks and months. What does that mean? Well, like I mentioned, my young granddaughter is in surgery right now. And if she was going to have surgery, when she has that surgery becomes pretty damn important with respect to the filter changeout cycle. So you could have it here or here, surgery, or even here. But you can see the filter efficiency can be very, very different depending on when you have that surgery. Now, that's not an incidental thing. One infection can mean a life. So, you know, we're not just selling filters. We're helping get decisions get made that can be life impacting. Okay? I call it a tipping point. Right in that area is when they flip-flop. And then a mechanical filter becomes superior. Now, what the hell does that all mean? Well, to me, what it means is you can't ignore one technology over the other. If you're going to design a product for a healthcare application, you better not ignore either one of these because this timing is not easily defined. It might be emergency surgery. It might not. It might be elective. You can pick when you're going to have surgery. Then you have some control over it. But sometimes you don't. So there's no reason why you can't use both technologies when you design a product, certainly for a healthcare application. So when the broad subject of efficiency degradation to me means something life-threatening. And it can be as simple as this graphic that you see here.
Are your air filtration personnel NAFA certified? Ask if they belong to NAFA and have their certified air filter specialist or NAFA certified technician designations. The CAFS and NCT designations are earned after rigorous exams and demonstrate that the air filtration professional has a high degree of knowledge and professionalism. To learn more about NAFA certifications, visit NAFAHQ.org.
The other big issue of the three was what I call chamber testing. This is a drawing that we had done early in the process. I think I mentioned to many of you this morning in the tour of the AHAM test protocol for room air cleaners is a room. You saw the room. It was white. We have a new one. It's all stainless. It's kind of cool. But it's a sealed room with three different challenge aerosols, and it's a way of a room air cleaner is tested. But you also know that we test in traditional ways, you know, the ASHRAE 52-2 protocol, ISO 16890, EN779 is a duct. And the typical things, we control flow and we control temperature and humidity. But in this picture here, we've combined all that, an AHAM room and an ASHRAE duct, and it ends up looking like this, fairly complex. And you all saw this today, whether you knew it or not, a recirculating test, a multi-pass test, is what I think should happen. I asked the question, how many actual applications of air filters do you know that only have single pass application? When you turn your home furnace on, you're recirculating air. Everybody is. Why in the world wouldn't we know the impact of that testing? So we came up with this protocol almost 10 years ago. We were talking it through. We've built this. We've done quite a bit of testing this way. When Dr. Miller talked earlier, she mentioned the ionization might not work as well as other technologies. Technologies that don't make the needle move at all in a single pass test actually do work, but you can't test it in a single pass method and learn anything. So what do? You do multi-pass testing. I can tell you now that this, what you see on the screen, is being worked on at ISO level. It's being worked on at ASHRAE level to create a new standard for a room air test that includes a recirculating loop. And now you can start doing all kinds of neat things. You can measure their performance in the room, not in the duct. So that's what you're concerned about anyway, the room air clean, what's going on in that room. So you could put a MERV 8 filter in this loop and some sort of technology, who knows what it might be, some magic thing in the room that enhances the performance of that MERV 8 and makes it perform like a MERV 13 in short order. Or one technology that makes it happen in shorter order. You need to know the difference in the two. So this is why this is happening. It's the latest, greatest in my mind, and I want y'all to grasp this concept and go forth and multiply. So say, you know, be the disciples of this method. Last big hit I want to talk about is ISO certification. I mentioned it earlier. Most of you didn't know what ISO 17025 is. And I just like a quick show of hands. People in the room that know what that means, ISO 17025, that do know what it means. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 maybe in the whole room. So it might not mean much to you, but when you go for a governmental certification, the California Air Resource Board, you better have it or they're going to audit you anyway. So just I mentioned to the team earlier, to the group earlier, when we were working on ISO certification, we also had several customers that were attempting to use us in a certified party way. So in a 15-month period, we had, let's see, Four Rivers Nuclear Power, Intertech, Underwriters, ISO, and who else, Bobby? Who am I thinking of? There were five major audits of our systems in 15 months. And that, I don't know if you've been through an audit, but your pucker factor really goes up when you have an audit. So we had, you know, five times the pucker factor. And to me, the fact that we came through with flying colors shows that, you know, we have earned the reputation we've built. But now we have validation. We can show anyone that we're self-auditing. We continuously improve. I've got a slide here to show you. This is the SAB certification page. If you ask us for our lab credentials, this is what you'll get from us. There's also a scope statement page that tells you all the material, the test methods that we're certified to do. And I just want to hit the high points real quick. 17025 is what I call certifying the certifier. Okay, so it's a level of complexity that's
mind-boggling. If you've been through an ISO manufacturing certification, you know how bad that can be and how little of it is useful. Same thing here, and then double it. It is formal. It's a quality program that's published all over the world. There are scope statement specifics that I just mentioned, that 52.2 is on this list, but EN779, all the methods that we wanted certified are on there. Some methods that we do are not on there because our customers don't expect it. And then there is a genuine focus on continuous improvement. We have corrective actions to a painful level, I think Bobby might agree. We have a quality manager that was 30 plus years quality manager at American Air Filter, Marilyn Watkins. And she carries a whip and a chair and a couple knives, two pistols. You know, she makes it happen. And I'm so proud of what we've done with her. And nobody got hurt, or at least, you know, that the short emergency visit didn't fix. There's a set of structured decision rules in ISO that you never see as a customer, but you get the benefit of. And we can always respond to you. If you have a customer that absolutely will not talk about anything until you have a certified fourth party certification, you know, an outside audit, we can help you with that. What I call third party audited is an A2LA, some registrar to audit you so that you can perform for your customer. And in this case, that's you. And we're ultimately performing for your customer. So there's four levels there. And I said, but for a reason, I end every presentation with this slide. I want you to see and think like we live on a globe, because we do. And any method that is unique to the U.S. but not to the rest of the world gets the job done for you, and you might go home and sleep well. But the rest of the world needs to function as a globe, including us. So again, I'm preaching to you. I apologize for that. But the whole issue is we need to behave like global citizens. And it's not that tough, you know, to get global standards. Tom?
All right, so we'll open it up with questions from the room. And I'll just throw in a few of the email questions that were submitted with it. But who wants to start us out?
Still not clear how recirculating the air changes the performance of a filter in a test duct. A certain percentage each pass, wouldn't you be able to just do the mathematical extrapolation for every recirculative air stream?
Yeah, you can do the math, but you can prove it now. You know, in a 52.2 duct, you can't. In a 52.2 test result, you've got one pass, and that's it. Okay, that's not how these filters are used. Some might perform better at multi-pass. Some kinds of polymers, fibers, different styles of design, construction of filters might go up faster than another comparative product. So we don't know. You don't know without testing it. So, you know, when we started this process, we were just curious. And we found that if you put a MERV 8 filter in there, you can get MERV 13 performance in about, you know, the equivalent of 2 weeks running at regular room changes. Dr. Miller suggests it was 6, maybe as many as 12, but 6 gets it done. So I don't know if I answered your question, Larry. The point is the dynamics are not known and they can't be modeled very well. So you go at it and test. That's our whole tenet. More questions in the back here. Scott? The question was, how long should we test to get an assessment or prediction of performance? And I don't know the answer to that, quite honestly. What we've done is a significant amount of experimental work. And there are two round robins we're working on right now, one with ICE and one with ASHRAE, that will address this issue. And I think what we'll find is that there's a way, you know, some number of air changes per hour, and ASHRAE recommends those, so use those, you know, to run the test. And it may take a few weeks, maybe a few days, but not 6,000 hours. No.
I have a question. When you mentioned the recirculation testing, would you be adding in dust or anything, ASHRAE dust, to that test? You said you wanted it to perform more like an in-situ test, like these filters are actually used with, you know, constant recirculation. And how would you know how much dust to add to create a situation that would be more realistic to how a filter performs?
Great question. You mean the dose and test mentality, you know, where you put an amount in and run it to, you know, a low number is one method. But, you know, generating at a known generation rate might make more sense. So pick one. You know, we've done that too. We just generate particulate at a given cycle and concentration and know what that is. Again, we don't have enough data to really make a good decision yet. So round robin testing becomes critical. You won't learn what you don't know till you try it. You know, it's that simple down here.
I have two quick questions. First, when you do the recirc test, how long are you doing that for? And second, you said you shoot baskets and you shoot guns. Do you ever shoot the basketballs with the guns?
The second question first. I wouldn't get anywhere near our facility when it's Friday afternoon. On how long we do this, it's basically the answer I just gave him. That we don't know, Bill. You know, it's one of those things that we're going to have to try things. And in the 52-2, for instance, we didn't know what concentrations to use, what, you know, what MERV really could constitute. So many labs tried a bunch of stuff till we learned that, okay, don't do that, do this. And, you know, the reiterative cycle to make sense out of it all still needs to happen for recirculation testing. But the fact that it exists and the fact that ISO's working on it and ASHRAE's working on it is the exciting part for me. You know, there will be a published method from ASHRAE for a recirculated test. It's coming. In the back there?
Sure. Yeah. I was asking about, and have you done any work on filter leakage as part of the MERV test or 16890 test, saying, take a filter that's supplied by the manufacturer, take it out of the box, put it in the duct, simply clip it in, don't bond it into the test duct.
Not in any structured way. Bobby, help me here. I mean, we've done some experiment. Yeah, not on purpose, but we didn't tape the filter in. But I can tell you, in my years at AAF, you're running the lab, you get bored to tears, you try things. And one afternoon, we cut a 6-inch diameter hole in the two outside surfaces of a pocket filter. We couldn't measure the difference in performance in that filter because its sampling is right in the middle of the duct. And this released only particulate right along laminar flow, right along the walls, and we really couldn't see it. So leaking is something that genuinely is known to, you know, reduce indoor air quality or increase the concentrations. There's no question about it. But no, the answer to your question is no, we haven't formally tried to do any of that.
Hi, Val, American Metal Filter Company. Looks expensive. What are you thinking, looking forward, for having this become a standard for air filter manufacturers? From a cost standpoint,
I got asked that question in the ASHRAE meeting. The research project PMS at the time, I think, was Kathleen. I'm not sure. The target for me would for it to not be more expensive than a 52-2 full test, period. Because 52-2 has many steps. You know, there are 5 efficiency loading brackets that you don't need. You really don't need. So you can chop all that off and make it a recirculation test. You can, you know, make some allowances to get the cost down into that general range of a 52-2 test, not much more. That would be a doable thing in my mind. More questions?
Bob, I got a question for you here. Starts out, hi, Bob, with the focus on PM1, PM2.5, PM10 being part of the global ISO 16890 test method. I see that ASHRAE made an attempt with PM1 52-2, PM2.5 52-2, PM10 52-2. He references a blog from Kathleen Owen. Mm-hmm. I think you know that one. My question is in two parts. What do you think of the concept? Number one, it seems to, and he notes, it seems to me like that is an average of the channel's ranges 1 through 3. And part two, can Blue Heaven test to these specific PM levels now?
The answer is yes. On the you know, we use a dust track or any nephelometer type product that can do, you know, mass measurements. That's not a chore at all. I want you to think about it a minute. When the PM number that the EPA uses outdoors is a concentration, you know, 150 milligrams per cubic meter is out of attainment. Okay. That's the number. It's not an efficiency. It's a concentration. The numbers that we're talking about in ISO 16890 and ultimately in ASHRAE 52.2 to show PM 2.5 is an efficiency measurement. And I can't tell you how many people are completely confused by this. Well, wait a minute. Is it PM 2.5, 150 milligrams per cubic meter? No, it's, you know, 50%. Well, PM isn't expressed in efficiency percentages. It's expressed in concentrations. They'd be right about that. So to me, it's a very confusing thing. In fact, in the 16890, I was on that committee too. There aren't too many committees I'm not on. That we argued pretty heatedly about whether we call it efficiency in PM because nobody understood it. So we put this little E in front of it. If you know, if you look at 16890, when you say the efficiency of PM 2.5, there's a little E in front of the PM that means efficiency at PM at 2.5. But, you know, when you have to sit down and explain to your customer the difference in concentration and percentages, you've already lost the battle. You know, you're not going to convince them anything. In any way, they're sure you're throwing a bunch of crap at them, and they don't want to hear it. And you know this better than I do. That you know, these guys are, you know, they're trying to make a decision, get it made in a legitimate way, and get on to business. And he says, well, let's stop and talk about PM 2.5. No, I got a maintenance schedule to do. You know, that kind of thing just really bugs me. But there was no way around it. I still think measuring efficiency of the PM levels at that less than 2.5 makes sense in less than 10 and less than 1. They all make sense, but calling it the same thing as the EPA calls it is a huge mistake in my mind.
Got plenty of questions, Bob. Here's another one from the email list. Bob, in your experience, how well do flat sheet air perm readings in CFM at half-inch water column standard pressure for Fraser translate into flow rates for pleated filters at higher pressure drops? Question in parentheses. I don't expect a simple answer, but have you observed any general trends over the years? Close parentheses.
Is flat sheet testing tell you permeability and resistance predictors is basically what it's saying. And I think, yeah, it does. You have to, you're right, it's not simple. There's this manufacturer can do a construction of pleats that's, you know, 3 inches tall and 20 pleats per foot, and this manufacturer can do 2 inches tall and 40 pleats per foot. Okay. Same amount of media, but completely different performance number and resistance numbers, because half of the resistance of a filter is what they call shape losses. And that's a fairly common accepted misnomer, that you, when you deal with a filter, you can make the media efficiency zero, and you only cut it in half, to finish filter resistance in half. That's true. So when you start looking at only half of the total as the thing you're impacting and measuring on a flat sheet, then you're already lost the battle again. You know, that efficiency or resistance can't be readily predicted of a finished filter from flat sheet media, in my view. Unless you put those brackets on it and tell it how you're going to manufacture the filter.
I'll tell you where this question came from later after we finish up.
Uh-oh.
So, Bob, what is more important for a business, sales or engineering?
Oh, God. Eugene is here. Eugene Beck and I have been arguing this for 40 years. And for the majority of my career, I would, you know, I can get sales guys that sell anything. You know, all you got to do is comb their hair back and put a gold chain on them and they can sell anything, right? Well, over the years, when you own your own business and you realize the sales function becomes a huge, you know, critical element of your business, then your attitude changes. I've come full circle. I've gone to the dark side. Is Eugene here? There he is.
He's here.
There he is. Did you ask it? You scumbag. He's right. You have to have legitimate sales and marketing functions. I mean, there are success stories. Sharper Image, the Ionic Breeze product. I mean, through two major lawsuits and a formal, you know, bankruptcy filing, they had a successful product. For a long time, it was called the most successful mail order product in American history. And the damn thing never worked. It never had a fan in it. It couldn't possibly work. But these sales guys can sell anything to anybody. And they did. You know, three easy payments of $300 each for a thing that cost $20 to make. For what, a decade, everybody was buying those things. My personal physician, you know, when you become older and you're a Boy Scout leader, that you have to have a full physical every year, or they think you're going to die on the trail, so they don't let you do that. I came in to get my normal physical, and there's these Ionic Breeze things in every room, every examining room. And I said, Terry, if you don't mind, why don't you unplug that thing? He said, why? Because it's dangerous. It creates ozone and it doesn't do anything. Oh, really? I didn't know. So I'm back, you know, a year later for another physical. They're all still in the rooms, but they're all unplugged. And then another year later, they're all gone. So, you know, it took him 2 years to digest what I was trying to tell him. The point here is you can, a good legitimate sales effort, whether it's a product that works or not, can be successful. But you got to have a good product and sales to ever succeed for very long. It's that simple.
So how frequently would you recommend testing a fresh pleated air filter to ensure the filter manufacturing process is producing a finished filter that is meeting the specifications desired?
Wow, that's a good question. I've got this hat on of a test lab, so it's hard for me to not say you test a lot. I wouldn't say you needed to do it more often than maybe every 3 years.
Yeah.
Something like okay. that.
All right. Can you review the difference in what a MERV 13 is now and what a MERV 13 was before the testing standards changed? What we are finding is 65% efficient bags being presented as MERV 13 and 85% efficient bags being presented as MERV 14. For hospitals, this can be confusing since state standards call for 95% efficiency MERV 14. But 85% efficiency MERV 14 is being sold. We'll let you write it in the Air Media Journal if you want.
I wouldn't mind making an effort to document that. Whoever wrote that question.
And I can give you that.
Let me know, because I'd like to talk more about it.
It's going to take more than a minute.
I was the chair of 52.2 when we made all those changes in the method and in the table. Because there's a huge problem with it, if you remember. And we did a whole series of round robin after the changes, and lo and behold, the method got better. And we were able to run round robins that lab to lab was great. And I felt like we did our job. But I haven't heard this story, this 65-85 thing.
I think it's worth pursuing, though. All right, so that...
I have the last question.
One more question.
Jorge Velasco from Air Quality de Mexico. Sorry, not Mexico. Mexico.
Mexico. ¿Cómo está?
Do you think that ISO will replace the 52.2 in the US? Because in Mexico, and Europe is replacing the 52.2.
I'm just shocked I haven't been asked that before now. Ultimately, there will be a global method. Whether it's that global method, I really don't know. There's an aspect, if you know the 16890 protocol, there's a step in the process where you modify your data based on two distributions, either urban air or city air. When they suggested doing that, I sat there with my mouth hanging open. I said, well, wait a minute. You're going to get all this great data, and then you're going to mess it up by normalizing it with a distribution that was done in the 60s. Yep, that's what we want to do. No. I voted no every time. But as you know, each country gets one vote. Each country has a TAG, technical advisory group. I've been on the U.S. TAG for 30 years. I voted no every damn time on that time, that particular issue, and lost. But there's a good answer to your question. There will be a global standard. It will happen. If we get rid of Biden and get rid of Trump and get some thinking people in there, something good might happen. I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Talking Air Filtration Podcast, a production of the National Air Filtration Association. Clean air matters.